The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. This is the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Donal Kavanagh with you on till 12 noon today and with you for the rest of this week. As we always say, a packed show lined up. But the most important part of the show is your contributions. So if you want to let us know what you think about the events of the day or what issues you'd like to hear discussed on the programme, you can text us 086 60 25000. That number good for WhatsApp messages as well. You can call us on 074 91 25000. 0035 374 91 25000 if you're outside of the dialing area. We're also, of course, on social media. We can be got on Twitter at Highland Radio. It's Highland Hub on Facebook. And don't forget, by the way, we are broadcasting live on Facebook and on our YouTube channel as well. That's a Highland Radio Ireland on YouTube. So you can watch the show unfold. Any guests on Zoom will be visible and you can see all the interactions as they happen. And you can, of course, comment on those platforms as well. So Facebook, YouTube, you can watch the show live. You can listen, of course, online as well on our website, highlandradio.com. And that website will, of course, have updated news stories all through the morning. Donna Marie working in the newsroom, of course. Outside, we have Niamh taking your calls along with Caroline. Caroline producing the show this morning as well. Let's take a look at our papers this morning. We start with the Donegal Democrat as it is a Tuesday. And Dunloe's Emily is world champion again. Emily Colangelo received a hero's welcome in her native Dunloe on Sunday when she arrived back with the Under-19 World Irish Dancing Championship title. It's the third time she's picked up that particular honour. She had the success at the Cumasúin Rinkí Gaeltachta World Irish Dancing Championships in Montreal, Canada on Friday. Also a sad story on the front of the paper. Body recovered from Crawley River. You'll have heard the story over the weekend. Gardaí investigating all the circumstances surrounding the recovery of the body of a man from the Crawley River in West Donegal on Easter Sunday morning. The man, believed to have been in his 40s, was removed from the river by the Coast Guard and pronounced dead at the scene. That's the front of the Donegal Democrat. Front of the Journal this morning, Derry Journal, big crowds for Carn Easter Parade, nice pictures there. And the main headline, crematorium plan for Inch. And Laura Glenn writes the conditional permission has been granted for Inishowen's first pet crematorium to be located on Inch Island. The permission was granted by Donegal County Council to Francesca McGate for change of use of part of an existing farm machinery shed and workshop to create that pet crematorium and all associated site works at Dlac or Bohullion. And that's the front of the Derry Journal. Front of the Irish Independent, one of the really sad stories over the course of the past 2 days has been that horrific crash in County Galway on the road between Galway and Castlebar in the early hours of yesterday. One 15-year-old Lucas Joyce and 14-year-old Kirsty Bohan killed following that collision on the N84. I can't wake them up, the headline there. The main headline on the front of the Irish Independent, private nursing homes get millions in COVID subsidies. Philip Ryan writes that the private nursing home sector has received €220 million in COVID supports in addition to the 11 billion that the industry gets annually from the Nursing Home Support Scheme, or the Fair Deal Scheme as it's known. The Temporary Assistance Payment Scheme is due to end this month, but new figures show that investment firms boasting billions of euro in revenue have drawn €148 million from the state's COVID support programme. And that's, you can read more about that there on your Irish Independent. The main photograph on the front of the Independent, Shades of a Dark Past. The tag underneath, a police vehicle is attacked with petrol bombs during a march by dissident Republicans in Derry yesterday. The scenes coincided with the 25th anniversary of the Good Friday Agreement and occurred on the eve of US President Joe Biden's visit to Northern Ireland. And I think, in fairness, the PSNI had been flagging up since Thursday or Friday of last week that they expected issues in Derry on Easter Monday afternoon. And it's not the first Easter Monday we've had pictures like this, unfortunately, and not the first Easter Monday we've had scenes like this in the lovely city of Derry. Front of the Irish Times this morning, Ombudsman criticises treatment of child asylum seekers. Discrimination means Ukrainians leave City West after a day while others remain. Dr. Niall Muldoon has warned the government of unacceptable preferential treatment. And that's an interesting story there. Officials warn of overcrowding risk in Mount Joy. Prison staff are considering buying bunk beds due to serious concerns over safety. And two teenagers killed and two injured in County Galway crash. That same story we saw on The Independent. The sports section, Jim McGuinness writing in the Irish Times, for Mayo, the hype and expectation has been replaced by a severe dose of reality. And if you want to read Jim McGuinness's thoughts, they're available to you in the Times. And the main picture is a picture of champion jockey Paul Tallent producing a ride for the ages to win yesterday's Irish Grand National at Ferry House on I Am Maximus, trained by Willie Mullins and owned by J.P. McManus. That's the front of the Irish Times. Irish Daily Mail. We'll hear a lot, obviously, from teachers this week, the week after Easter, traditionally the week for the teachers' unions conferences. So the teachers' unions are going to be very busy. Norma Foley is going to be very busy going from conference to conference over the next couple of days. And the main story on the Irish Daily Mail, teachers looking for €280 million pay rise, a figure that would fund 7,000 new teaching posts. Teachers are demanding another pay rise and want earnings to match the highest level of inflation or double the current rate. The Education Minister will be told today an additional pay increase for teachers would cost the state that further €280 million. John Boyle of this parish, of the Irish National Teachers Organisation, said a significant pay rise of up to 15% is needed to counter the housing crisis and the rising cost of living. That's the front of the Irish Daily Mail. Irish Daily Star this morning. Two teens dead in smash. Treasured students' tributes have poured in for two teenagers who lost their lives in that horrific Easter Monday car smash. A Galway school said they'd lost two treasured members following the deaths of Lucas Joyce and Kirsty Bohan. Two other teens were hospitalised. Teenage driver and another pal are rushed to hospital. Front of the Irish Daily Mirror, again, it's the same headline. Three teens die in bank hall horror. Also, GAA starlet David, 15, and two friends killed in separate accidents. Three teenagers died over the course of the bank holiday weekend, including Leash underage GAA player David Brown. He lost his life in a quad bike accident close to Emo Village. And there's more on the inside of the paper there. The front of the Mirror, also a picture of Joe Biden. Holy Joe is the little headline there. President Biden will visit Knock Shrine. Now we know that Joe Biden flies into Belfast tonight. We have an overall idea of his itinerary. I've been hearing that, obviously, with Donna Marie on the news throughout the course of the morning. But we'll not get the nitty-gritty details until closer to the time for obvious security reasons. But it does appear a visit to Knock Shrine is on the cards for President Biden. Front of the Irish Sun this morning, four kids aged 13 and 14 in car, girl and boy dead in 6 a.m. crash horror. Another boy and girl fight for life. Also, Monk's duck party for 60th. The monk will be dreaming of Chinese grub as he turns 60 in jail today. The Regency accused plans a duck pancake meal with friends if he's freed next week. That's the front of the Irish Sun. And that's how your papers are looking. It is 14 minutes past nine on Highland Radio. It's a Tuesday morning. Let's go to Zoom, and we're joined this morning by Councillor Micheál Cullen-McGillhasburg. Micheál, maidin wa?
Maidin wa, did you want to look at cash quite that yesterday, look at that?
Good morning. Micheál, two issues to discuss with you. First of all, I want to speak to you about Anvraj in Donegal and the fact that someone lit a campfire and then walked away, a potentially very serious situation, thankfully averted.
Yeah, I was on my way back from Belfast on Saturday, and I got a number of phone calls, and people were extremely and rightly so angry. We had a situation, which is not uncommon, where we had people camping at the beach at River Edge, right beside the airport, within walking distance from the airport, maybe about 50, 60 feet. This time of year, with things being, how things can be very dry, and we've seen the horrific Goss virus that we had over the number of years. And somebody was down over the weekend, camped, lit fires, and then took all their scrap and set it alight and just drove off. And that's not acceptable. First and foremost, the idea that you think you can come along to the community, our community, which is absolutely beautiful. The airport here has been selected over many years as one of the most beautiful landing sites in the world. We hold that with great pride. We have a fantastic management and staff at the airport who works extremely hard at what they do. We have the Carrick Finn Trust who owns that land. We take great pride in our community. And the idea that somebody thinks that they can come along, put a handful of rocks around in a circle, camp in a place where they didn't even have the respect to ask, could they camp there, and then let a fire and then bugger off. That's not acceptable in any shape or form. I'm sure you saw the video yourself. It wasn't a case that there was a few sods of turf. It was a case of that they had plastic and wood and different materials and set it alight. And one person who came along and tried to put the fire out and unfortunately couldn't put the fire out, had to ring for assistance then to put the fire out from the airport. And that's, you know, if anything happened in between times while staff were away doing what was the right thing to do, you know, it would have left a different story for me and you to be talking about today. And like that, there's nothing wrong whatsoever, in my opinion anyway, as long as it's respectful to go wild camping. I do it myself around the islands, even around that area there. But the idea that you can think that you can come along, and if you go down to, like, if you look at some of the places around West Donegal, you come along and there's nothing but dots of black marks. People think they can just light fires. There's other ways of doing that. There's a respectful way to do that. And we see that the vast majority of the campers and the tents and the camper vans, that's how they actually do it. But this here, it's actually enraged quite a lot of people.
It raises the question, is it time perhaps for CCTV cameras so that if people act in that way, maybe car registration numbers can be captured and people can be called on to account for their actions and where necessary to make reparations? Because as you've said, it's not the first time this has happened.
Well, I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure about CCTV cameras. I'm not a massive fan of them.
Yeah, I know you would have other issues, but
I think people's privacy is very important. But I do know that somebody has caught the registration of this car on their phone by chance, purely by chance. And I am seriously considering putting it out there for the world to see who actually it was, because I think it's very clear that they were camping there, the fire was lit, and their car was in the camera by chance. And it's just not right. It's just not right. And I know people may think there's more important things to be worried about. Yes, there are more important things in some aspects to be worried about. But if that fire takes a light and it spreads, and we've seen the damage of loss of homes, loss of property, and very, very lucky there was no loss of life a number of years ago. Exactly this time of year, it was Easter. Mm-hmm. There were two separate fires. We fought one on Friday up in Drumnacart. We spent all day fighting there where we lost poor Anne, lost her house and property. Then we fought on Easter Monday. We fought over a huge area of West Donegal where people were so great from different parts of the county and country came to our assistance. But some foolish people just don't realise what impact this could have on our community.
I remember that one well. You say, and it's coincidental that this happened so close to Airfort Dunedin. Let's talk about what happened at the airport because of operational problems with the Aer Lingus regional flight. It never left Dublin, and then the return flight never left the airport, and a lot of people found themselves stranded.
Yeah, this is not unfamiliar. And first thing I'd like to say is this is no reflection whatsoever in relation to our fantastic staff, from cleaners to managers at Airfort de Breage or Airfort de Ningal, who do fantastic work day and night. But the airline yet again, for technical reasons apparently, and I use that in the inverted commas brackets, is that there was technical problems. Maybe there was, I'm not sure, but I do know one thing, it's not good enough. That flight was full to leave West Donegal and Gaeltacht yesterday. I had one person in particular who was heading back yesterday to go to work today and couldn't make that connecting flight. Now, I don't know everybody that was in, that was to fly yesterday, but I do know some of them that were in contact with me, and a lot of them were home for Easter. A lot of them had to get connecting flights from Dublin onwards, and now they're going to be out of pocket. We all know that it's difficult enough to finance the home journey, to come home to see your parents and loved ones in your community. But this airline now, yet again, have cancelled flights. Now, I've been in contact where I've asked Thomas Pringle to raise this, what the Minister Thomas has done this before. I want a list of all the cancelled flights since the beginning of the year. It's not good enough. We wouldn't expect and we would tolerate if a bus didn't come on time. And at a 3 o'clock bus leaving from the Gaeltacht to go to Letterkenny or to Donegal Town or to Ballyshannon, wherever it's going, and it just didn't turn up. And then we weren't given proper notification. One of the people that were in contact with me says, if we got the notification in time, we might have been able to get alternatives to be in Dublin for the connecting flight abroad. But they didn't. And it's a mess. And I would call on the airport to come out and give a statement, and not just a press statement. Come out, talk live like we are now, and tell us what's going on, and apologise to our community. Because it's not good enough. Like it says, you wouldn't tolerate for a bus not to turn up. They wouldn't do it anyway. The bus companies that we have in West Donegal are second to none, and they wouldn't do that anyway. But what I'm saying is the community wouldn't tolerate it. So why should we tolerate a flight deciding not to turn up? We seen it a couple of weeks ago. It was days and ends that we were without flights. And the concern is that this is going to go back to the situation where we had a couple of weeks ago.
Now, I'm sure some people will have bought integrated tickets where the connecting flight, hopefully they'll be able to at least get the money back or get an alternative arrangements made. But there'll be some people who will have had a flight on another airline that it's not a connecting flight that they've paid for, and the money for that flight they've missed is gone, because as far as the other airline is going to be concerned, they missed their flight. So from that point of view, people will not only find themselves discommoded and late for work or whatever, they're going to find themselves in some cases, quite frankly, severely out of pocket.
Absolutely. Like that one person, the individual that I'm thinking of, and no doubt maybe his family here listening to me talk about it, he's going to be actually very much out of pocket. He would have then had to get a lift to Dublin. Mm-hmm. He would have had to either share or pay for that petrol or diesel. He would have then had to get a flight at the last minute that would have cost him X amount of hundreds. And if he wasn't able to get that flight would have been got today. So that would have been still $300 for a flight, and possibly the loss of wages. So the airline, we all know, won't compensate for that there. But there should be stricter legislation in terms of people who are out of pocket at all. Surely if it's a case of bad weather or maybe heavy or strong gusts or something like that there, people can understand that. But yeah, by coming out and saying yet again a technical issue, sure, that could be anything to write down to a puncture.
Yeah. Well, we know that Deputy Pringle did raise it with Leo Varadkar on the floor of the Dáil in February. At that point, the Taoiseach said he would look into the problem. So hopefully the Taoiseach will get some answers, and they will get some answers from the airline as well. It's an Aer Lingus regional flight, obviously. Didn't leave Dublin and then subsequently didn't leave Carrick. So presumably there was a number of people who would have been trying to get back to Donegal were severely delayed getting back up to the county as well as a result of that. So it had impact on both ends. Michal,
I've noticed this morning when I woke up this morning, I noticed there was a few comments on my Facebook where people saying the return flight didn't leave until somewhere around 10 o'clock. Listen, this is really important, and people might say first world problems, but it's not. It's really important that we have the public service that we as taxpayers paid for. And Thomas, I'm confident, will continue to raise this. Wouldn't have any much faith now in Leo Varadkar given a response that we should be getting.
It's on the earlier issue.
Again, now and again.
Well, there's a headline for us. Micheál Conor Mhaigh Ospagh, not a fan of Leo Varadkar. That's a shocker.
I'd say everybody's shocked about that one.
Absolutely. Just on the earlier issue, caller says, we live in such a beautiful county. The councillor is right. A fire can so easily spread and cause huge damage to the local community. Never mind the vegetation and the animal life. So, I mean, I don't think anyone's going to disagree with the first comment, certainly. Micheál Conor Mhaigh Ospagh. That's Councillor Micheál Conor Mhaigh Ospagh there speaking to us from West Donegal, and as he said, that is a really, really difficult situation where you have fires lit by people. They come camping. Now, as he said, there's ways of doing it that's respectful to the community, and there are ways of just coming in and doing it randomly, and this appears to be one of those random things. And you know, we do have such a responsibility whenever you're camping like that. And I have friends who camp. I'm thinking of one friend in particular who camps an awful lot. Hail, rain, snow, winter, summer, autumn, fall. And I know that he is hugely responsible and his family are hugely responsible. And as Micheál rightly pointed out, most people are. But certainly when you're in a community like that, it really is important that we show any community we're visiting the respect that they deserve. And I think respect is the right word there. Respect is the absolute right word to use, because when you're visiting or when you're in an area, you respect the area. You expect them to respect you. The least you can do is give them respect back. Another issue, and a letter, and letters always welcome. It's the 9 till noon show, Highland Radio, Pine Hill Mountain Top, Letterkenny, County Donegal. Let's be honest, Highland Radio Letterkenny is going to get here. We don't need to worry over much about the mountain top or and any of that. Could you please bring it to someone's attention? Walking past the old tourist board building, two old caravans and rubbish lying around. It's a lovely walk now with the new footpath and bicycle lane, but when you see this, it's awful. We live in a tidy town. Can that be tackled? I think I actually know the area the caller was talking about. It's just the other side of the Port Bridge, if I'm correct. If you're walking in, say, from the direction of the Dry Arch toward the Polestar roundabout, on the left-hand side, just before the Port Bridge, when you're on that new footpath, in on the left-hand side, it's like a little wooded, a little, almost like a little dale, if that's the right word, and a wooded area, and there's two caravans and yet some rubbish in there. The caller is correct in that. And yeah, it's an issue that potentially needs to be looked at, and hopefully that will. And I'm sure the council is aware of it, but no harm to actually say it and let the council know. Thank you very much indeed, caller, for that. 28 minutes past nine. We're going to take a short break. Back after these. And you welcome back to the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. As we said at the top of the programme, it is the week for teachers' conferences. And Joanne Irwin of from Donegal is the Assistant General Secretary of the TUI, the Teachers Union of Ireland. Their annual congress taking place from today at the Silver Springs Hotel in Cork City. And Joanne joins us now on Zoom. Joanne, good morning to you.
Good morning,
Donal. It's always Easter week is the week we always get the teacher stories, Joanne. And there are a number of issues being discussed, issues that people will have heard over the past while, the retention crisis, the recruitment crisis, and also reclaiming the profession from bureaucracy. An important time to be having this conference, one would have thought.
Absolutely. I mean, we recently conducted a survey and we found, for example, in the last 6 months, of all the teacher vacancies that there have been nationally, 70% of those vacancies didn't have one teacher applying. So we really are at a teacher supply crisis. We are seeing subjects being lost in school because we don't have teachers. We see now more teachers teaching out of field, which means they're teaching subjects that they're not qualified to teach. So that is really affecting the service that we can provide to students. So we're trying to, you know, we've been saying this for 10 years that the unequal pay that we had post 2011 was going to cause this. A lot of people are, you know, getting their qualification here, going abroad, and then they're not coming back. And we're trying to incentivize those teachers who are abroad to come home. And the only way that we can do that is if we offer them full-time contracts when they come home. And there is the availability there to do it. But we're seeing a lot of employers who don't want to offer full-time contracts or permanent contracts day one. And it's the only way we're going to address this crisis now in the teacher supply issue.
The other issue, of course, is pay, and at least one newspaper making the comparison that if teachers were to get the level of increases that are being sought by the various unions, the amount it would take to fund that would be enough to create 7,000 new teaching posts. Now, presumably, that's 7,000 new teaching posts at current salary levels. Your argument to counter that, I'm sure, not that I want to put words in your mouth, but your counter argument that's going to be, we can't even get teachers now, never mind get 7,000 more.
Absolutely. And for second level teachers in particular, we are now seeing a surge in demographics of that age cohort from 13 to 18. There was a big surge going through our primary schools. That has now hit our second level schools. So we can't get enough teachers to meet the democratic needs, the increase in the students coming into our schools, never mind trying to do anything else that would enhance the education profession. But we really need to look at it. We're seeing now a lot more teachers leaving the profession early as well, which is a new phenomenon that never happened before. We're seeing people retiring at the age 55. And when we say to them, like, why are you going? They say, it's not because of teaching. We love teaching, but it's the paperwork, it's the admin, it's one initiative after another initiative. And if they could just get back to teaching and learning, you know, the problem would not be as bad.
You do have, among the issues under discussion, as we said, reclaiming the profession from bureaucracy. What's been the cause of that? Is it new circulars coming from, be it Haddington Road or whatever, or is it the lack of secretarial and support staff in schools? I mean, what's at the root of this?
A lot of it is new initiatives that are foisted upon schools from the Department of Education. We've seen, for example, yesterday the Minister announced a whole programme around bullying and bullying awareness, which we absolutely welcome. We've no difficulty with that. Schools and teachers have always responded to various societal pressures, but we don't have the management structures in our schools anymore to support that. In schools, there used to be a post structure where people could apply for assistant principal one or assistant principal two. They were all, most of those were pulled in 2009 when there was the crash in the economy, which we understood at the time, although we didn't like it. But we're in a better place now. We need these post structures back in order to support all this administration work that's been foisted upon teachers. If you had more posts, we could have more pastoral care for students and all of that. At the minute, it's just been put on teachers to do for free. And it's not going to work anymore. And we, as I say, we have no difficulty with all these new initiatives if the structures were in schools to implement them.
The housing emergency obviously is going to have a major impact on this. And whatever it's like trying to get teachers in a county like Donegal, I mean, I can imagine there must be schools in Dublin in very, very serious difficulty, because I'm sure there are schools that are trying to get teachers in, but there's going to be nowhere anywhere next or near that school to rent that's going to be coming in at less than $2,000 and more a month.
Absolutely. And I look after a lot of the schools in the Dublin area. It's a huge problem up there. There are subjects that are being lost there, particularly around the areas of engineering and construction studies, where teachers who would normally be teaching these subjects are now going back into the building industry. And we have students there that are doing the Leaving Cert in May and June of this year, and they've had no teacher all year. Like, it is really, really that bad. And in our survey, we found that 84% of those who we surveyed, which were those who joined the profession since 2011, can't get accommodation. And accommodation is the huge factor. Now, in some way, that benefits Donegal, because a lot more people are coming to the West, where accommodation, although there still is availability crisis, it is that somewhat more cheaper than it would be to rent if you can get anywhere in Dublin. So the housing emergency will be discussed here at our Congress on Thursday. And we would have a lot of speakers who are just commuting huge distances. We have one teacher, for example, who's commuting every day from Limerick to Dublin. I mean, we talk about a climate emergency. We talk about all of that. Like, that's unsustainable. That's going to be a teacher who's going to burn out very soon and leave the profession. And it's purely because she can't get anywhere to stay around the Dublin or the commuter belt.
We know that, for instance, the INMO last week, the Nursing and Midwives Organisation, was looking at the new children's hospital that's being built beside St James's. Anyone that gets the Lewis from Red Cow into Dublin City Centre will pass by that building site whenever they're on the Lewis going in from Red Cow. But they're saying that, look, if we are going to get staff for a new hospital, they're going to have some form of modular housing, cheap housing units available for nurses in the city centre so that people can live in the city centre within walking distance of the hospital they're working in. Is a similar initiative like that going to be necessary for schools, do you believe? Do you think the government needs to be taking maybe a more holistic look at this and saying, well, maybe we need to do something, be it a short to medium term measure, where we can actually create accommodation for the nurses who are going to work in the new children's hospital, for the teachers who are going to teach in city centre schools, and maybe extend it out to other areas, be it Cork, be it Limerick or whatever, and even extend it where necessary to places like Letterkenny, where there is, as you say, maybe the rents are a little cheaper, but there is still issues of availability. And in highlighting Dublin, I don't want to in any way minimise the issues that you're going to get in Letterkenny or Sligo or locally, because there are issues. Let's not hide that fact. I mean, are there going to be initiatives like that needed from government? I mean, is it time for some new thinking rather than sort of saying, well, the market will take care of it, because we've been looking at the market an awful lot in the past couple of weeks and some of what we're seeing is not pretty.
Absolutely. And just to say, look, as I say, look, I have a lot of schools in Dublin. They are now advertising jobs with accommodation. We would never have seen that before, particularly around the areas of schools that may have boarding facilities for students. They're now offering that boarding accommodation. Come here, we'll give you a full-time contract, we'll give you permanent day one, and we'll give you somewhere to live in your first year. Like, that's hugely attractive to a teacher coming back from Dubai or Australia or somewhere like that there to come back in. But there absolutely needs to be thinking around that, and there's not. It's only the schools that can afford to do that that are offering that at the minute, such as the fee-paying schools. You're not going to get that in a disadvantaged school, you know, in the middle of Dublin city centre. But the government needs to think about that. I mean, that absolutely would be, like, solve an immediate problem. And it is immediate solutions that we need right now, not long-term, plans. Like, we know the minister announced that an additional places in primary teachers, but that's not going to come on stream for a further 6 years until they're qualified. And to be honest, all that means is more people to go abroad. Like, we're trying to get all of our teachers who are abroad to come back home. And, like, one of the things that we're looking at, and I know it was something that Joe McHugh, when he was Minister for Education, like, he was out there trying to get teachers to come home. Though some of those teachers did come home, but only to find out all of their service that they did abroad isn't going to be recognised here. So they're starting back at the start of the scale again. So there are a lot of things that could be resolved literally overnight that would really solve this crisis.
Let's discuss pay, because let's be honest, all the teachers' unions are going to be saying to Norma Foley quite forcefully, I'm sure, over the next couple of days, we need pay increases and we need realistic pay increases. Various figures being mentioned, I mean, figures up to between 10 and 15% and in some cases perhaps even more. Is TUI putting a figure on this in terms of what you're going to be saying to Norma Foley? This is what we need in order to keep the teachers we have and attract more teachers in.
Yeah, so we haven't put a figure on that at all. We generally don't. I suppose we are currently in the current pay deal, which doesn't run out until December. It's likely that the talks around that pay deal will commence either before the summer or in September. And what we have asked at the minimum is that any pay increases would match inflation, just to keep the cost of living, you know, sustainable. We're not looking for huge pay increases. Like, there's loads of people out there that are completely worse off, and we get that, but we are looking for a match of inflation, and we have not set any figure on that. We generally don't in the TUI, so we just kind of see where things are at the time of those pay talks.
Finally, in terms of, and you travel the country, Joanne, you see what's happening right across Ireland, you see what's happening in Donegal with the ETB schools, your old bailiwick as it were. I mean, what's your sense of the short to medium term future? Are you confident? Are you wary? I mean, do you believe these issues that you're highlighting can be overcome, and that we can say, look, we have traditionally had an education system in this country that we can be proud of. It always had its issues. It always had its problems. It's going to continue to have issues and problems. Nothing is perfect, but it was always a fairly good system. Are you confident we can get it back to have that sort of respect and to have that reputation that it would have previously enjoyed?
Absolutely. I mean, as you said, we're one of the highest performance education system across the OECD and across Europe. Like, we rank very, very high in all international standards. But we do have a teacher supply crisis. It is not unique to Ireland. It is across Europe. We're seeing it at a lot of European conferences that we attend. But we can see measures that can be implemented tomorrow morning at no additional cost to the state that would really solve this, such as give teachers permanent contracts day one. Give them full-time hours day one. We have teachers down here who are speaking now this week who run 3 hours a week. and they can't work across schools at the minute for various different employer reasons. But that should be resolved. That teacher should get a 22-hour contract and be put where that need is. You know, be that, and I have to say Donegal ETB are actually really good at that. Where there is a need, they do move teachers. And even the whole issue around teacher supply, like certainly in our community comprehensive schools, our voluntary schools and our ETB schools in Donegal, we are very, very lucky in that we are able to plug a lot of those gaps because a lot of people want to come home. And that's something even I attend all the student talks in the universities throughout Ireland to encourage them to obviously to join the TUI and speak about the profession. But every single place that I go, there is someone from Donegal and all they say to me is, I want to go home. I want to go back. I want to give back to my local community. I want to go back to my area because I can see the, you know, the teachers are part of a school community. And that's really evident, I think, more so in a rural area than elsewhere. So we are lucky in some way that we can shield that locally. It's not the case in some of the other, as you say, the urban areas that I look after. It is a real problem. If there's ever a redeployment scheme, there's a lot of people saying, I'll take this opportunity to get back home.
Norma Foley obviously has been minister for a while now. You've been dealing with her for a while now. Is she a minister that you have confidence in?
Well, that's a strong question. I think everything around the senior cycle reform would certainly make us concerned over various announcements made by the minister. Like there was an announcement made in March 2022, so over a year ago, that there was going to be reform to senior cycle. We welcomed an awful lot of that reform, but there was an announcement made that the English paper and the Irish paper was going to change. And then for a full year, we heard nothing. And we were begging for consultation. We were begging to get into the door and say, what does that mean? What does that mean? And then only a few weeks ago, we were told it was deferred. So we definitely, look, every minister should consult with the people on the ground who are actually, you know, to implement all of this. And I don't just mean teachers, I mean the students. I mean, we work a lot with the Irish Second Level Students Union. And obviously the president is from Letterkenny as well. And but she needs to listen to the people who it affects and the people who have to implement it. So I think there is an opportunity to do that. I don't think it has happened to date.
Caller says teaching posts are struggling to be filled. It's because they're predominantly temporary, substitute or part-time and not permanent. Who can risk coming home for that? And that really, I suppose, speaks to what you were saying to us earlier.
Absolutely. It's a huge problem. And even if a school, like a lot of people come back and they might get a maternity contract, they might cover for 6 months, but there's no reason why the state can't employ these teachers on full-time contracts and move them around to the schools where there is that need, particularly in areas such as Irish or the sciences or maths, where there, you know, there's schools that would love to offer chemistry, love to offer PE, for example, and they can't because they may only have 6 or 7 hours a week to give a PE teacher, and there's no PE teacher going to come back from anywhere for 7 hours a week. But there could be 7 hours in one school and 7 hours in another school in order to reach their full-time contract. So that's no additional cost to the state, but it's just kind of thinking, I suppose, outside the box a bit.
Joanne Herman, thanks indeed for speaking to us this morning. Assistant General Secretary of the TUI. I'm not sure, do you say enjoy your time in Cork? I suspect you're going to be very busy down there over the next couple of days. But we can expect quite a lot of stories to come out of the various teachers' unions conferences, all of which are taking place this week. Joanne, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you, Norma.
That's Joanne Irwin there, as we say, Assistant General Secretary of the TUI, speaking to us there from Cork, and that conference getting underway today and other conferences getting underway today as well. Now, let's read some comments. A very sobering and serious comment. A caller says, over the weekend, I read a passing reference which was total news to me and shocking that more people have now died by suicide in Northern Ireland since the Good Friday Agreement than had died in the previous 30 years of the Troubles. Why is this fact being swept under the rug, although it's quite politically convenient to cover up? But damning, this says something is terribly wrong and nothing is really being done to save the thousands of young lives. What does it say about a shared future? Sadly, there are lives being lost by suicide all over, not just in Northern Ireland. It's happening here as well. And We regularly, sadly, hear some sad tales from our own area as well. Is there a political cover-up? I'm not sure that there is a political cover-up per se, but certainly it's an issue that does need to be discussed. I absolutely agree with the caller on that one. We do need a large discussion about suicide in Northern Ireland, in the Republic of Ireland, in the UK, across Europe. There needs to be a discussion on this because there are some very sad stories coming, and sadly no part of our island and further afield is immune. We know there were scenes of trouble in Derry yesterday, close to the city cemetery, where a commemoration had taken place before and after the ceremony itself. We had been getting indications from the PSNI on Thursday and Friday of last week that there were concerns something could be in the offing for Easter Monday, and so it came to pass. Joined on the line by DUP MP Gregory Campbell. Gregory, a very good morning to you.
Good morning.
Gregory Campbell, we often hear, you know, that these incidents are spontaneous and it's not intended, and it just happens because of disaffection in an area. It would seem that that explanation can't really be used on this occasion.
No, that's right. When you look at some of the video footage that we all saw, probably on news bulletins, and you saw crates of petrol bombs, so it wasn't a case of somebody going off and getting a couple of bottles and filling them with some petrol. It was a case of something being organised by presumably older people, because quite a few of those who were actually involved in the petrol bombing were quite young. You know, they looked to be anything between 11 and 16 years of age, around about that. So normally that wouldn't give you the indication of an organised thing. It would more likely be older people who have some experience of this. So that's concerning, and I think the police now have to step up their plans to try and deal with this. They had helicopter footage up. They had Land Rovers there with cameras. So they have to try and ensure that the people behind this are brought before the courts.
As you said, many young people involved in these incidents, and even someone who is 15 now, they were born 10 years after the Good Friday Agreement. So the excuse that they're reflecting what they experienced during the Troubles, etc., that really doesn't hold water. I mean, these are young people who have grown up in an era of peace, who have not in any way experienced what people like yourself and people of your age and your vintage would have experienced over the years in Northern Ireland.
Yes, and that would tend to allow us to make the assumption, and I think it's a fairly soundly based assumption, that the older people who were orchestrating yesterday's events were also orchestrating the mindset that brought people out onto the streets. I mean, even if you're trying to organise young people and arrange crates for petrol bombs and getting the petrol, to actually motivate them to throw petrol bombs at Land Rovers and at police officers, you need to try and inculcate some form of hatred and animosity and political angst in their mind to get them to do that, even if you organise all the things behind the scenes. So there's an element of organisational activity that's going on that I think the schools, parents and community workers have to try and deal with to stop this reoccurring.
Michelle O'Neill has been vocal in her condemnation of what happened. Sinn Féin have been vocal in their condemnation. Community leaders in the city have been vocal in their condemnation as well. Do you take some comfort from the fact that people like Sinn Féin are quite strong on this, that it appears that this does not have the support of what we might term wider republicanism?
Well, certainly condemning it is better than condoning it, which is what used to happen in years gone by Sinn Féin personnel. So condemnation is much better. But I think we need to go beyond that, because we all need to stand not just in condemnation of this, but we have to then actively say to people in the community, to neighbours, to friends, look, this is just not acceptable, and we're going to take steps to ensure that everybody knows it's not acceptable. And if those steps include getting the names of people we believe who were involved to the police so that they can call them in for questioning, then we are prepared to do that. That's what people have to do now, as well as condemnation. Because, you know, the dissident Republican activists will wear the condemnation. It's like water if it ducks back to them. They expect to be condemned, but they don't expect to be sitting in front of a judge and hopefully getting sentences that are, you know, somewhere in the region of what is required to deter them from doing it again. So that's what's required, as well as condemnation.
And the other question is, given that it is, as you've indicated, widely believed that there will have been figures behind the scenes who were orchestrating what was happening, the sad reality is, in cases like this, very often the ones who find themselves before the court are the ones in the front line who have been directly involved, and those that were pulling their strings and those that were pushing them into that situation in the background tend to stay in the background and tend not to be called to account for their actions.
Yes, and that's where I think the parents of the children yesterday come into play, because they need to consider, do I want my son or daughter, mostly young males, but do I want them to end up in the position where they don't get a job? And the reason they don't get a job is not because there aren't jobs available, it's because they have a criminal record. And part of the reason for that is I allowed them as a parent to get involved with people whom I believed to be engaged in illegal activity. They ended up throwing petrol bombs at the police officer, and in a few years' time, when they come of age, they end up getting into more trouble, and the cycle continues. That's what parents and community workers and all of us have to remember, that these young people will end up doing harm not just to police officers and vehicles, but they'll do harm to themselves for a lifetime if we don't ensure that the community as a whole unites against this activity and gets it stopped.
It's clear that the police had intelligence that this was going to happen. They were quite clear from about Thursday, Friday, and even earlier than that last week, they were quite clear that something was going to happen on Easter Monday. It has happened on Easter Monday before. It's not the first year that we've seen those scenes in recent times. You would expect, I'm sure, that a police investigation will continue that will hopefully build on that intelligence from their point of view and try to get the root of what actually happened here.
Yes, that's, as I said earlier, that's what needs to happen now. The police did give plenty of notice, but they also, in giving plenty of notice to wider society, they were also indicating that they had plenty of notice. So hopefully now sufficient time was allowed for them to have plenty of video footage now, which they will be able to go through over the next few days and weeks. And they probably have a reasonable idea of who may have been involved behind the scenes anyway. So hopefully we can expect to see people being questioned. And if sufficient evidence is available through the video footage, that needs to be compiled into a case, goes to the prosecution service, and hopefully convictions follow. That's the way to deal with this. And if parents at the same time ensure that their young people, their sons or daughters, aren't involved in this sort of activity, that's the way to stop this and to ensure that, you know, whenever President Biden arrives later on, the last thing you want is video footage going across the globe of petrol bombs thrown at police officers in a vehicle. And then a few miles away, the president visiting, hailing peace in Northern Ireland. How ironic would that be for footage tonight and tomorrow?
Will you be meeting President Biden during his trip? Are you going to go to the airport tonight?
No, I'm otherwise engaged, but I know Sir Geoffrey will be meeting along with the other party leaders. So I imagine it will be quite short because it is a brief visit, but they may get an opportunity to have a brief discussion with him.
Gregory Campbell, DUP MP, thank you very much indeed for speaking to us this morning.
Thank you.
That's Gregory Campbell there, MP in East Derry. Earlier we spoke about the delays to the flights and Councillor Micheál Cullen-McGlaspach saying that Thomas Pringle will be looking into the issue. Just a caller saying, I called Thomas Pringle's office asking for information about something. I was told they'd check it out for me. It's 6 months ago, I'm still waiting and I haven't heard. That's just a line there from a caller. And it's very much coming up to time now for news and obituary notices. Just one or two more comments. Just a little note in. The Good Friday Agreement is 25 years old and so are you. We'd like to celebrate the 25th 25 years of the Good Friday Agreement with all those born on the 10th of April 1998 by wishing them all a very happy and peaceful 25th birthday. A mention from you could spread the word to families on the island who could join in that celebration of relative peace in a personal way. Thanks to all those who work for peace and continue to do so. And that comes from Susan, Arthur and Fran. It's a very nice little thing. So anyone who turned 25 yesterday on the 10th of April, who was born on the 10th of April 1998, congratulations. You share your birthday with a very, very important time in the politics of our country.